Time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
Thanks, Barry. Yes, indeed it is that time again. Time to tug at the hem of the national discourse. Drink. This morning's Outsiders are gathered, champing at their bits. New Matilda's news therapist, Zoe Krupka, is with us. National Affairs Editor with Crikey, Bernard Keane. And Tom Switzer, Editor of The Spectator Australia and Research Associate at the United States Study Centre at the University of Sydney. Good welcome to you all.
Morning, Jonathan.
Oh, very, very bright there, Bernard. Out there in the Twitterverse, our Sunday Extra bespoke
I think that was Tom.
Oh, hello, Tom.
Jonathan.
Sorry,
so, back you might want to get, when you're get in the panellists' names right.
Down. And out there in the Twitterverse, Sunday Extra bespoke tweeter for the morning, Chris Berg. Join the Twitter babble under the ABCRN hashtag. Now, political communication, as opposed to seamless, flawless radio communication, which is what you're not listening to, political communication has been something of a theme for the week. The government rolled out perhaps the most significant piece of tax change. Why do we always call these things reform? A significant piece of tax change we've seen since the GST. In their restless quest for effective communication, some members of the Gillard cabinet were even moved to song. Sadly, that's all we have time for there. The response, and we all know what comes next, and we're not going to hear it because I'm so sick of it. The response to Craig Emerson, the Gillard cabinet's minister for karaoke, was interesting. Zoe Krupka, is all politics performance? Why are we surprised when it veers like that into musical comedy?
I don't know that we were really surprised. I think what we were was extremely critical of Craig Emerson for being, a real guy, you know, a proper idiot.
Certainly a proper idiot.
He was a proper idiot, as opposed to a kind of a performance of a real guy, which we saw with Joe Hockey on Carrie Anne with those beautiful little Shrek ears he had. He looked adorable, almost harmless, but he was doing a kind of a performance of a real person, whereas I think Craig Emerson was actually being one, unfortunately for him, I think.
But this is the thing, isn't it, Tom Switzer? All the politics we see in front of us on the screen and so forth, it's all on the script. It's a tight little piece of acting, isn't it?
Well, maybe it's a legacy of this relentless 24/7 internet media cycle. You know, it makes sound policy making so much difficult these days, and politicians, Labor and Coalition, you mentioned Joe Hockey, but there was Alexander Downer with his fishnet stockings, although I think that was a bit different because it was for charity, and that was some time ago. But increasingly, a lot of these politicians are
Christian
feeling
Kerr's
the need
finest
to do...
moment, too, I think.
Right. But it was, these politicians, they're almost driven to doing things like this because there is such limited attention span now for serious debate, I think, and both sides can be guilty of that.
It's sort of a logical extension, though, isn't it, Bernard? It's just the desire to cut through. I mean, they'll be nuding up before we know where we are, won't they?
Oh, heaven no. Look, I'm not sure about that. Look, I think Emerson's a bit of a deal. I mean, he's a very, 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 very intelligent bloke, but his political persona is the Gillard government's class clown, and that was what he was acting out. But I kind of, as opposed to most of Emo's stunts, I didn't mind it at all because it was so god-awfully daggy that, only Emo could have thought that up. And, you know, we all sit around and lament, you know, the talking points politics, the relentless adherence by nearly every major politician to the script.
And then someone goes joyfully off-piste and...
Well, there are some politicians who can communicate without a script and treat us like intelligent adults, and Malcolm Turnbull's the best example. Lindsay Tanner was another very good example. Barnaby Joyce, too, a little bit different, but he's in that mix as well. He doesn't bother with the script. He just says he's removed. He's had surgically removed from his head that filter between your brain and your mouth. So he just opens his mouth and out stuff comes. And Craig Emerson's in that group as well. Not so much because he treats viewers and listeners as an intelligent audience, as he is prepared to make a bit of a goose of himself and go off piece, as you say. And you know, it's a bit much for political commentators like me to whinge and whine about the adherence of talking points politicians to their scripts. And yet bag out the Craig Emersons of the world who at least want to, communicate like a normal people. There's all sorts of different ways of communicating in politics, and modern politics has come down to the one banal form of communication, which is, you know, Penny Wong sums it up, this sort of dulcet tones, rigid adherence to talking points, same old cliches pouring out of her every time she opens her mouth.
Zoe, do we want more genuineness, more straight from the heart, do you think, from the political class?
I think we say we do, and I think some of us do, but I think we've gone so far into this kind of narcissistic performance thing that we don't know the difference between a real performance and a performance. You know, we don't know the difference between Alexander Downer.
That's purely the actor's craft.
Well, exactly. So I think we are asking for it, but we're obviously not voting for it.
The talking points, Bernard, that leads us with the neat ease of a great segue to your great scoop this week for Crikey, which was the dumping of a substantial document of the sort of complete set of coalition talking points across a range of policy issues. I mean, there was it gave the lie a little bit to the theory that they haven't thought about all this other stuff.
I mean, there was no stunning reveals in the document. What it really, well, at least for me, gave an insight into was I suppose the mentality of partisanship. And partisanship in, as Tom said, Tom makes a very good point about the impact of the 24-hour, and in fact, it's no longer 24-hour. It's sort of, you know, it's a sort of an 8-hour media cycle. You get 2 or 3 media cycles per day now. And it will continue to accelerate. I mean, there's no signs of that slowing down. And these, I mean, the material that we had this week really is all about relentlessly staying on message, hammering the same message over and over again. How many different ways can the coalition find to describe how bad Labor is? Well, look, you could enumerate the ways.
130
pages of my favourite one was the coalition's commitment on aged care reform. Its very, very first commitment was to not behave like Labor behaved in 1997. I mean, I wonder if they'll still be saying that in 100 years' time.
Tom Switzer, I mean, there's no, as Bernard says, with 3 media cycles a day, of course political parties are going to resort to this sort of rigorous scripting. I mean, what option is there?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I briefly worked for the Coalition for the Opposition Leader's Office 4 years ago, and these things were around then. And I must confess, I didn't take a great deal of notice to it because it was just so scripted. And, you know, politics is ultimately a battle of ideas. And those who prevail, you know, they don't just have better ideas. Well, the whole idea is to sell your argument and get out there and present the evidence. But look, to be fair to these guys, and of course Labor does it, and I suspect the Greens do it as well, if they don't stay on message, journalists like Bernard will quite rightly highlight party disunity and divisions, and that creates all sorts of problems for the party itself. So there's such an insistence on keeping backbenchers on side, and so there's no signs of disunity, particularly when the media can easily pounce on it.
Now, all that sort of planned communication is well and good, but sometimes things happen. Now, noticeably yesterday, it was actually a good weekend for things happening. There's the growing stoush between New South Wales right of the ALP and the Greens. And for the Liberals, there's this running schism over gay marriage, with Malcolm Turnbull increasingly caught between his conscience and the coalition front bench. Here's ABC's Tom Nightingale reporting for AM on Saturday.
Until now, Malcolm Turnbull maintained gay marriage campaigns held back other equality reforms. But in delivering the Michael Kirby lecture last night, the Liberal MP said he backed gay marriage. He also conceded it was unlikely to pass Parliament, and those campaigning for gay marriage should compromise.
I think it would be a great pity if marriage is not able to be passed in the Parliament, civil unions, that opportunity to pass civil unions should be taken up, and I think it probably will be.
Bernard Keane, what's going on there with Malcolm Turnbull? Not only was he getting a little bit off script there with the Michael Kirby lecture, but he's on Q&A tomorrow night, and he was having swipes at Andrew Bolt on this subject on the internets yesterday. It's a bit of a campaign there from Malcolm, is it not?
Well, we can't help but see all these things through the prism of the leadership, despite the coalition being several suburbs ahead of Labor. Look, it comes back to the fact that I think less about some tilt at the leadership, and more about the fact that Malcolm Turnbull, unlike 90% of his party colleagues, is. A highly intelligent bloke who is not prepared to, hide that particular light under a bushel, and doesn't feel any sort of restraint about speaking out on issues that he believes are important. And if it leads him into circumstances where he is perceived as being at odds with his leader or at odds with key people in his party, well, that doesn't appear to really be a significant check on him. And it's partly a reflection on us, I guess, that, and on the way that Turnbull is effective as a communicator, that the bloke only has to open his mouth, and it seems as though he's campaigning for the leadership because he is so significantly different to his leader in the way he communicates.
23 away from 10, this is Outsiders on RN Sunday Extra with Bernard Keane, Zoe Krupka and Tom Switzer. Zoe, that's an interesting point about Malcolm Turnbull. I mean, he does cut through because he's a human being. I mean, that doesn't say much about the rest of them. Does it sort of speak to a desire, though, for us out here, us the voting public, for more of that kind of figure in our politics?
I think it does. I think, you can only toe the party line so much without looking like a sheep eventually. And so, most people want to vote for a man or a woman as opposed to a tower of the line, I guess. So there has to be that balance with most leaders, and that's been our criticism of Julia, was a criticism of Kevin, was a criticism of certainly Harper in Canada and other leaders as well, that they were too compliant and complacent and on talking point too often.
Tom Switzer, does this to some extent, do you think, explain the allure of the Greens, that there's a certain naive genuineness about them which is appealing, and is that what the New South Wales bits of the party are particularly worried about at the moment?
Well, there are hardheads in the Labor Party who have absolutely no time for the Greens, particularly on cultural and social issues, and indeed economic reform issues. But look, back to Turnbull, I have to say I disagree. I have to disturb this harmony, Jonathan. I think
that's why you're
Turnbull
there, Tom.
Is... that's right, mate, yes. Keep Jared Henderson on his toes. Look, I think Malcolm Turnbull should recognise that, and a lot of his supporters completely ignore this fundamental point, the centre of political gravity in the Liberal Party, and indeed in the country, I would argue, is well to the right of where Malcolm Turnbull and many people in his inner city seat of Wentworth stand on gay marriage, but particularly on the carbon tax. And Malcolm is completely out of step with public opinion on both, well, certainly on the carbon tax. I happen to agree with him on the enhanced military cooperation issue, but I don't think that most of his colleagues would agree with him on that question. So I think if he has any sort of intentions to be the leader of the Liberal Party again, he's going about it the wrong way, particularly when, and a lot of people forget this, he's already been the leader of the Liberal Party, and by all accounts, he was a complete and utter failure. I mean, people are still laughing about the Goldwyn-Gretch episode.
So bad. So
I think
bad
we should
he
bear
was
that
defeated
in mind.
By one vote. But
well, indeed, but look what happened with the poll when Abbott became
sure.
the leader.
Yes,
the
indeed.
Polls now have completely reversed, and it's not because of Malcolm Turnbull.
The point, though, that Tom Switzer makes there, Bernard Keane, about the centre of gravity of politics is probably the same point that Sam Dastyari, the New South Wales Secretary of the ALP, is making about the Greens and Labor.
Oh, yeah, to an extent, but the Liberals can deal with that issue from a position of power and credibility. I mean, no one's in any doubt as to where Tony Abbott and the Liberal Party stand on a range of issues. There is not just clarity of message, but consistency of message, and it's in tune with the party space. None of those apply to Labor. Labor can rail at the Greens all it likes, but it doesn't have credibility or authority about where it is positioned in the political spectrum. What does Labor? What a you know, we keep asking this question, I've been asking it ever since the last election, what does Labor really stand for now? And it's a very difficult question for Gillard Labor to answer. It was to some extent, a difficult question for Rudd Labor to answer, but it's even more difficult for Gillard Labor.
They need a better class of slogan.
Well, it's more than that, though. I mean, the Greens have got credibility and authority with their base. The people, even people who disagree with them, know what they stand for. They may mock it and deride it and thoroughly disagree with it, but there's no lack of, you know, very much like the Abbott-led coalition. The Greens have a pretty clear policy position. Labor's caught betwixt and between, and trying to differentiate itself from the Greens might be a good move long term, but it's got to kind of work out what it stands for first before trying to differentiate the product from the Greens.
Now, time to talk about something serious here on Outsiders. It's 19 minutes away from 10, RN Sunday Extra. Who among us doesn't remember with certain fondness this rather famous excerpt from the Oprah Winfrey Show?
He's in the building! Yeah,
okay. I'm in love.
I know what he's doing. He's processing. He's trying to figure out what he is going to tell. I've never seen you like that!
I know.
We've never seen you behave this way before.
I know.
Have you ever felt this way before?
You're gone. You are gone.
Tom Cruise there, one time lovesick puppy, now world-famous divorce litigant. Zoe Krupka, you wrote magnificently on this for New Matilda this week, that the Tomcat saga, sort of a story for our times.
Well, I think it is. I think it's a bit of a Bluebeard myth, really. You know, young, naive woman marries older man who's not quite what he seems.
She should have stuck with Pacey.
I know.
You know.
I know.
Sorry, it's a Dawson's Creek reference.
That's all right. We can all be old together. I think, you know, when you listen to that clip, you can hear that he is, of course, talking about himself. He's not saying, you know, what a great woman I found. He's talking about himself. He's talked about himself a lot. And Bluebeard, of course, was very into himself as well. And we saw, I think, Katie as being trapped in the castle, and we wanted her to be free. I think that was part of what fascinated us, really, because, you know, some of us are not unfamiliar with that scenario.
Trapped in a castle and surrounded by E-meters.
Exactly.
Bernard Keane, I mean, is it something about the poverty of other discussions that we soak up something? I mean, I guess it was ever thus, but is it innately more interesting to look at their divorce, or is it just that everything else is just so appallingly drab?
No, this story's got the wonderful overlay of Scientology, which is the shadow around and in the whole story. That's what makes it engrossing. And when you get Rupert Murdoch intervening on Twitter to bag Scientology, maybe it's a distant echo of his one-time feud with a Packer family coming out there. I read overnight that the Scientology sort of central policy unit had sent out a missive to Scientologists, telling them to get online and whenever they see a negative reference to the church in any Tomcat story, to try and have the reference removed in order to prevent the church from being defamed. It's a wonderful echo of those epic 1990s wars that Scientology engaged in with the internet. But I found it interesting that. Rupert, and this is not so much about Rupert Murdoch as about the rest of us, that it's sort of okay to bag Scientology in a tweet, but any other religion, that sort of comment would someone would even a Rupert Murdoch would pause before uttering such.
You're nodding in agreement there, Tom.
Oh, I think Bernard's right. I mean, this episode will certainly put Scientology under the spotlight as never before. But I think the real issue here, and this is a point that my colleague in London, Melissa Kite, makes in The Spectator, you know, perhaps more crucially, so will controlling men. I mean, isn't this really the story? Controlling men are not sexy. And if you look
especially
at his record,
controlling me, I think that's the key issue here.
Yes, their wives are all taller, but Minnie Rogers, Nicole Kidman, was Penelope Cruz, and now Katie Holmes.
It was aspirational, really.
Well, capable women should not be choosing to submit themselves to dominant males, and that's something, you know, this is something that should be well known by now, but I suspect this is the real story here.
Tom Swisher.
He's trying to control her life.
Thank you for that insight. That has been Outsiders for the morning. You've been listening to Tom Switzer, Bernard Keane, Zoe Krupka. More of Malcolm Turnbull tomorrow night on Q&A, and we will see who first rushes to his aid when he falls headfirst onto the desk, which may, of course, not happen.